See what I'm saying? Greetings and salutations from the Agile Podcast. This is Tony.
And Craig.
And Renee.
And we have a special guest.
Steve Krug.
Welcome.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So for those who don't know you, Steve, tell us a little bit about who you are.
I have been a usability consultant for about 25 and 30 years. And probably people who know anything about me know most is that about 15 years ago, I wrote a book called Don't Make Me Think, about how to think like a usability consultant. Tried to write down what it is I'm doing when I'm doing my job, because I think most of what I do is pretty much common sense. So I think most people can do a lot of what I do. Hopefully I can do it better because I've been doing it for 25 years. But I do think it's the kind of thing that most people who are in the business should be doing themselves, because there aren't nearly enough usability people to go around, and they can't be around hanging over your shoulder all the time.
I'm surprised by the book. Actually, I was surprised you said to me I was 15 years old. I think I came across it maybe 7 years ago, I think.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that old until you said it.
Maybe it's longer. I'm getting older and the time is floating by. But because it's a simple book at its heart. It's what I call an airplane book. It's one you can read on a fairly short flight.
Yeah.
But did it surprise you that it was so popular because people were needed to suck that information up?
It surprised me that it was so popular. I actually was handed the chance to do it. Got a surprisingly large advance because of the person who engineered the deal for me. And never expected to make back the advance, actually. And the reason why I wrote it was because I thought if I had a book, I could raise my consulting rate. Because I had great clients and did great work, but I didn't have any credentials or, public. That was why I did it. Well, I found out in retrospect afterwards that I could have raised my rates anyway.
There we go.
So it didn't work in that regard. But then shockingly, over the course of about a year, it started selling like hotcakes. And it has sold at pretty much consistently the same rate for 16 years now.
Interesting enough, I was just speaking to someone who is a UX designer and UX fan. I'm not sure if you met him here, and he'll love me mentioning Ben Melbourne.
Ben
and I were conversing about it, I said, when did you start reading that book? And he was saying, quite some time ago. He said, but I have to keep buying it. So he's looking after you because he keeps giving them away.
I love that. There are several stories about the book that I love. One is I bought it and I gave it to my boss, and my boss bought it for the whole department. My wife particularly loves that little story. And the other one is people keep stealing them from me, so I keep buying them.
Yeah, you had to give one away this morning, actually.
Oh, no, I mean people have it on their desk and people just walk off with it. Yeah. No, I wish I could have brought more. I couldn't carry more.
So one of the questions that I had was, and a few people commented to me, they said, it was a great talk, but this stuff's been around for ages. As you said, it's been around for 15 years.
Right.
So what's stopping us from doing this well? Why is it so important that we still have to keep talking about it?
You got me. It's certainly come a long way in the last 6 or 7 years. I attribute it to Steve Jobs and the fact that he was able to make products which everybody said, oh, well, that's actually pretty easy to use. Maybe it has something to do with why he sold a gazillion of them. So I always say he made the FAQ. What's the cost justification?
ROI.
He made the ROI case for usability but then at the same time, it sort of morphed from usability into user experience design, which is an interesting morph. And so now I consider usability to be like a wholly owned subsidiary of user experience design, which is fine with me, as long as people are making the stuff better. But I think a lot of people kind of got it, but on the other hand, there are so many people still to get it. I think the people who are coming into the business now, like kids who are coming out of there, and there finally are programs, they're like degree programs for you, and so they know it, they've got it. But I think there's just so many people working in digital stuff that still, I just moved really fast, and I'm shocked when the fellow introduced me this morning asked that question. He said he has asked that question like into three different groups, and so he asked this morning, and there was like So you've got, what, 1,200 people? And most of them thought that, that experience design, that kind of thing, has not really permeated their organizations
yet. Half the audience only put their hands up.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I couldn't tell.
Yeah,
yeah. Whether they're doing it well or not is another.
Yeah, good point. Right. Yeah, there was very few that said going well. It was sort of like maybe 10 people put their hands up for that.
Yeah. The interesting question.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
The question I'd like to have seen them ask was, when do they do it? Because I think you hit the nail on there. One of the things you said in that I got today was it was in your maxims, I think it was.
Start doing it before you need to do it.
And I, working in organizations, see it all the time. It really, the usability is the last thing they do.
Right. Mm. When it's not worth much at all.
Or it creates massive rework.
Right. But often when there isn't time for massive rework. I mean, it's changed some, but it used to be that usability testing was the kind of thing where people would say, when it was clear the product wasn't coming together that well and they were about to hit beta, that somebody would say, maybe we ought to take a look at this and let's do some usability testing. And all you'd find out was that it wasn't working and that you didn't have time to fix it. Unless you were going to postpone the launch.
I thought you were about to go down the lean path in the talk and actually do the comment around, well, the biggest waste that we have in software development is building the wrong thing. This is a means to be able to not necessarily prevent it, but help reduce those instances.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I sort of wanted to work out before, I kind of wanted to work out what I thought about lean before this conference, but I haven't had time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of it that I like, and there's some of it that I'm like leery of. But they are, as a usability person, they're pushing in the right direction.
Tony's a lean guy, so you can...
Yeah, like no, you can no, no. So yeah, all my best friends are lean guys.
Yeah.
And there is a lot that I like. I mean, there are a couple of things that comes down to it. One, the whole failing thing makes me crazy.
Yeah,
it's like, no, failing is not a positive. if you react well to the failure and you learn from it and you course correct, then that's a positive. It's how you pick yourself
learn
up.
Fast.
I think we need to clarify that I was an agilist before I learned my
I would lean, expect, right?
You can back
But where are you now? Are you an agilist again?
No, I think I call myself a legalist or an agilian or a...
Yeah. We just call you old.
Yeah.
No, I think there's
much.
A lot of great things about lean. And like I said, I recommended Laura Klein's book because I think she's really got a great attitude about it.
Yeah, I think that the problem with lean and UX and those sorts of things is the problem, and I talk about this all the time, even on the podcast, is that it's the standardization stuff that lean talks about is very, very, for my money, is very production oriented, right? And when you're talking about usability and you're talking about software development, humans are the blip in the radar. And you cannot standardize the human, right? So that's where usability and those types of things have to be accounted for.
Right, right. Yeah, we what I liked about usability from the very beginning was that we're a user advocate group. That's our role, is user advocates. And I think that's it's a very pleasant role to be in. And I guess the other thing that bothers me about lean, I shouldn't say this in public. I often make I often make admissions against interest. It's just, I can't help it. But the disruption part of lean startups, I'm not a huge fan of disruption as a goal.
Yeah.
As an outcome, that's fine. But as a goal, I think it leads to a number of things that shouldn't exist. There, I said it.
Yeah, that's good.
But anyway.
So I think the thing I really took from today, and again...
Oh, you have an Apple Watch.
I do, yes.
I noticed that a minute ago.
Yeah, we're friends. We can send love
hearts. Oh, I can send you my heartbeat. I've never done any of that stuff with my Apple Watch.
My question.
I could write you a little message, draw you a little picture, and
How's it on the usability hopefully, scale?
Hopefully they're eliminating all of that from Apple Watch 3 OS.
Yeah, yeah. It's all a bit clunky. No, the thing that reminded me, since it's been a long time since I read the book, I kind of forgotten, I guess, the simplicity of usability. But I think the thing you really sort of showed on stage is that I think people get hung up that if I want to do usability, I have to go and get a high-priced UX expert. Mm-hmm. A lot of organizations have one or two. But what you really showed today on stage is that every team should be able to do this. Every team should be able to do it every... At some cadence, right? Whether that be every iteration or not, and you've given them the resources that particularly your resource of, you know, here's your scripts, just go read this and stand in front of someone is really good. Is that what you see people as you go and consult with them? One of their takeaways that they continue to do this.
I don't teach it in the consulting way. I mean, I teach in-house workshops from time to time, but mostly I just teach workshops, mm-hmm. And I do find, you know, I feel like at the end of the day, I feel like these people are going to go home and a good percentage of them will start doing this because they do get it. That's great. I mean,
it's so easy.
It's so easy. That's all I'm trying to get across. On the other hand, I hasten to say, if you have the money to hire a usability professional, then you should spend the money. But Jacob Nielsen said it years ago. He said usability professionals shouldn't really be doing usability testing. Mm. They should be teaching other people to do usability testing, and they should be thinking deep thoughts and working on thorny, wicked problems.
If that's such a precious resource because there isn't so many of them.
Right.
What we want is those teams going and actually realizing the usability is not great, and then using those resources to help solve wicked problems.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's again, it's the sort of thing where, you know, one of my favorite things is like a cubicle test where if you say you were designing a web form, okay, then you draw the web form on paper, you go to the guy in the next cubicle and you say, you got 2 minutes, fill this out for me and tell me what you're doing while you're doing it. And by the time he's finished filling it out, you've eliminated, you know, like the worst problems that you weren't going to be aware of that were in it. And what's the overhead there? You know, it's like that's what people should be doing. You can do a lot of that.
That was a great thing in your demo today was watching that person trying to navigate a website and her
and explaining. Taking the mickey out of New Zealanders.
That was not my intent.
You scored a lot of points.
That was not my intent because as I said, now you remember that right after it was over, I said that the site actually was in most ways very well done.
Yes,
you did. That I had used it and that it was very well done, but there was this inherent problem at the top, which sort of amounted to the fact that somewhere along somebody had said, this should look good too, and it ended up looking like a travel site. And
it was Kapiti Coast, by the way. Kapiti Coast.
Kapiti Coast?
Yeah, that's the picture.
Oh, okay.
A resident Kiwi expert.
People trying to swim away from New Zealand?
They were trying to swim. They were digging hippies out of the sand.
But I would argue that if you take any immigration website from any country in the world, that it would have approximately the same number of high-level problems. Even the Australian one, which is very well done, has the same high-level problems. And they're partly because the choices that they're trying to lead people through are inherently complex because of the nature of immigration laws. You know, I spent a ton of time on the Australian side trying to figure out what I should be doing. Mm. But it's very well done, and the New Zealand one in most ways is very well done too. I don't like doing demos or showing examples of bad sites. You know, it's like I think you learn more by looking at a site that's basically well done, and then you say, oh my God, they put in so much work on this, and it's really a good site, but it's got problems. Maybe we should be testing our stuff. Mm. You know.
So in fairness, having gone to the U.S. visa site. Just as bad.
Oh yeah. No, I would expect that any site, except possibly, it's because of what the GDS has been doing and the amazing stuff they've been doing, that maybe the UK immigration site might be better. But I would say, other than that, the immigration sites around the world probably all have the same problem.
It's a very complex problem.
Stood in the immigration queue at the airport for 2 hours to be told I was standing in the wrong queue.
I know, I've had that too.
Oh, we...
So talk about usability problems.
We got told by American Airlines told us that our bags were checked through to Melbourne. We were flying through Sydney, and they did not tell us that in Sydney we needed to actually collect our baggage and put it through customs. Oh dear.
That's a slight failure.
Service. Yeah.
So from a terminology perspective, I think there's an awful lot of UX terms out there that can actually be quite confusing to people who are new to the community. So okay. You've got lean UX.
Yes.
UXD.
Right.
You've got...
CX.
DT, design thinking, you've got CCD, customer centered design.
Right.
Yeah. Are they UX, all the same CX. Thing? Or?
Well, no, and that's why I said, like I said, I kind of wanted to figure out for myself, I kind of wanted to do my usability lean, you know, usability or UX in Agile, to figure out what all of that really, you know, how you parse that out. And I hadn't really started thinking about CX until just recently, the difference between CX and UX. I mean, CX basically is UX owned by marketing. No offense.
You're right. I think it's just a cool
term. But on the other hand, what is UX? You know, I somewhere deep inside me, I have a blog post about the difference between UX and usability / UCD that I would like to write. And partly it has to do with the temptation of UX to drag us to the dark side. But that, I will say no more at this point.
But when you do think about usability and user experience, what you're doing is really trying to stand in the customer's shoes and and learn from them in order to fix problems. The experience is more about the design,
right? And that's why UX really is pretty much UXD.
Mm.
You know, it's a design function, whereas we're I don't want to say evaluation because it's more than that. We're a
Were you a tester? Is that what you...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of at the heart of it. You know, I think usability testing is at the heart of it. I mean, there's... Usability falls under user research. So there are a couple of good things for user research. Go out and talk to them, do contextual inquiries, do whatever, and figure out the needs part of it. And then there's also the, once people are working on it, put it in front of people and get the insights that you can from having people actually try and use it. And it produces enormous insights really quickly and cheaply and whatever. So it's kind of hard to characterize, but we're just like a component of user experience design, which is fine. You know, I mean, there's interaction design, there's all these other things. Information architecture is even getting lumped under user experience design, which is kind of weird. So I'd kind of like to take a shot at sorting it out. But did you ever see somebody did a, I guess it's a PDF of like 250 diagrams of what UX is?
No.
So, yeah, it's very cool. I don't know who it was. I have a printed out PDF and it's like that thick at home. But it's basically collected all these different people's attempt to show the relationship between UX and all these other specialties. And they're all different. They're all the diagrams. There's tons of Venn diagrams. It's not simple.
One of the things I see with UX is you keep the developers honest. So someone who's worked in web environment since the early days,
like
I worked on the very original internet banking sites and those sort of things, right? And I remember them quite clearly, and I've written some things about that over the years. Is, you know, we had the whiz bang fly out menus that would end up across and then they drop down and they go, and you know what, we did it because we could. We didn't do it because it was good, right? And how it's changed now from there to now is that if you're not usable, then people don't accept it. Whereas back then, it was, well, yeah, it's crap, but we have to use it, right?
Yeah.
Now they turn the switch and go, we'll find something else.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, particularly with apps. You're paying 99 cents for an app.
And you can put an app in an app store in 10 minutes, right? So, yeah,
Apple takes a week to do.
Right, yeah.
Do you find when people get serious about usability, they then see a flow-on effect to other parts, you know, for example, the quality of their software, the you know, perhaps the speed of delivery, because it does find a whole bunch of
The problem is I don't get around enough to see that. You know, I really don't. I don't get around that much.
Hmm. Should be the outcome, though.
It should. That would be a good thing. I just think general awareness of the need to pay attention to how people are going to use it and what they really need has increased. Mm. You know, on like certainly it's gone up.
What I liked out of today's talk that I got also was that in times gone past, and I can remember in the web environments, we did do usability, but we'd usher the people into a small room. We had a special usability consultant, and we had the cameras following where the eyes went. But the thing that you were driving home today is good if you can do that, but you don't need to do that.
Right.
You can do it cheaply and quickly and easily, and I think that's something that'll make it more accessible to people if we can get that message out.
I've been trying. I've been doing all this time.
So what is the key advice then to people listening if they're saying, I do want to put more of a focus on usability? You know, where do they start?
I think those two things. I think contextual inquiry, go out and talk to some customers. You know, if you're thinking of doing something, then go out and figure out how people do it now, figure out what they use to do it, what their pain points are, what they'd like to do, and maybe even show them some prototype ideas, but just for your own enlightenment, not because they're going to tell you whether it's good or not. But then as soon as you start doing stuff, and even before, do regular usability tests, do them on some routine schedule. And the routine schedule actually turns out to be very important, because historically, as you know, usability testing used to be linked to deliverables.
So when
beta was ready, we do a usability test. Yep. But the problem is beta would then slip by 2 months, and so would the usability test and whatever. So I really am pushing the idea of set up a fixed schedule, like we're going to do usability testing once a month, or we're going to do a test once every sprint, or twice every sprint, or whatever. Just test whatever you have at that time, rather than hinging at the deliverables.
Your advice was you only need three people.
If you're in Agile, you may only need one person. If you're testing once a week, you may only need one person. You know, and that's fine. Yeah, but you certainly don't need eight, and you probably don't need five. Mm. You're probably going to learn most of the lessons you're going to learn from three. Mm. And if you have time to do one, then just do one. You know, I always say testing with one user is 100% better than testing with none, or somebody pointed out it's probably infinitely better if you were do the math than testing with none.
Because so. I think the other thing you said was exponentially too, the more people you get, the more you have to fix, and then you end up on that back.
The harder it becomes to decide, you know, and keep people from scurrying off fixing low-hanging fruit instead of doing the serious stuff.
It makes it harder to target the things that actually matter.
Yeah, because bad problems, you know, the longer version I talked this morning is, you know, goes into how we've all had the experience of going to a website and there's some serious problem there. There's like some really bad thing about it. And you look at it and you say, well, this is not like Bob's GarageBand did this website. They put millions of dollars into this. And here's this major, really bad thing that a lot of people are going to have trouble with. Why is that still there? And I would argue that it's usually there for that same reason that unless you really focus on the most serious problems, you have to make yourself focus, make your team focus on the most serious problems. And the problem is that people, that's why I said the thing about tweaking, because usually if you say, well, we've got to focus on this serious problem, then people think, well, we've got to go in and redo that whole thing, you know? Whereas it may be very often it's a serious problem because one of the words is wrong, you know? And you're not going to make it perfect, but you could take it out of the category of being something that everybody has trouble with to being something that half the people have trouble with just by changing a little wording, you know? And you should do that. And then worry about really fixing it completely later. But that's it.
And that was one thing you did bring up when you showed that book at the end, which is actually a lot of it is in that wording. If you can throw that in the direction of people who...
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm. No, that's a great book. Ginny Reddish, Letting Go of the Words. Mm. Everybody, I'll go around. If I'm like preaching to the choir, I'll say, okay, so who's read this book? And so everybody should read this book, right? And they'll say, oh, they are all shaking their heads and saying, yeah, this is like...
I particularly like the gentleman who stood up this morning and said, you know, they don't use usability tester because they're building the software for the in-house.
Then the question I would love to is, how much do you spend on training?
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
we've all been there.
We all remember that.
Anyone who's worked in the enterprise environment.
Yeah.
We don't need that stuff. It's internal.
Right.
Yeah. And we've all seen those apps where everybody who works on it goes, this is bad.
Right. But the funny thing is I was thinking after he said that this morning, the funny thing is that Jacob Nielsen actually did a couple of good Alertbox columns about ROI, and one of the points that he made was the easiest case is for internal users, because it's really easy to figure out the ROI, because you just take their salary, their hours, how much time they waste, and it's your money. And, you know, you can calculate exactly how much money your organization could save by improving this usability. So it's kind of funny that it's ironic, I guess.
It's very ironic. Yeah. And as soon as you said it, I had that burning thing in my head going, oh, no, I've been there.
I'm having battles now on a project where...
That's why I said something about it later. That's why, because it really just stuck with me. I was like...
And I'm sure there was a lot of other people in the room. I was looking around.
So
there's a whole bunch of resources on your website. So, like, for example, the script and things you use.
Well, yeah, from the rocket surgery book, from the book about how to do testing, you have to go to the page for the rocket surgery book and then find the downloads link. And the script I use for usability testing, the checklist for preparing for a test, the handouts for observers, and basically any of the forms that are in the book, you can just download them from there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And the address for the book is?
My site is sensible.com. Mm-hmm. And so if you just go to the homepage, there are links there for a rocket surgery book.
And if people want to go find the book, the books are?
The books are Don't Make Me Think, 3rd edition, the one with the purple, magenta, whatever cover, is the best one because it's only about 3 years old. And Rocket Surgery Made Easy.
Mm-hmm. Which is a companion.
I always think of it as the younger brother who was forced to go to high school where his older brother was like a varsity football star, and it's a much more modest book. But it's a specific. I mean, don't make me think is kind of it's everybody's introduction to usability, as it turns out, fortunately for me. But Rocket Surgery Made Easy is for people who think they actually want to do some usability testing themselves. So it's a very slim handbook that tells you everything you need to do your own usability tests without any more than you need to know, which is what I like about it.
Excellent.
That's why it's thin.
Yeah, so yeah. I guess that's moving towards the end of the podcast for us.
Yeah, yeah. I think the last thing I just want to say is it's great having you at this conference. Oh. I think usability is one of those things
we've never actually done it on the podcast.
No, that's where we want to grab it.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's great. Mm. That's great.
So I think from us, we have a little thing. So we don't do the box fish and so long and thanks for the fish. Douglas Adams fan, obviously, so you go higher in my book even more. I'll have my towel. It'll be fine. Don't panic. But at the end of the podcast, we always do a little Viva La Revolution. So if you wanted to join in with us, it'll be fantastic.
Okay.
So on the count of three.
One, two, three.
Viva La Revolution.
Thank you.